Welcome to Catholic Theological Union's podcast. Today's podcast features a lecture by Sister Sally Latkovich, CSJ, on the topic, What is Spirituality Anyway? Sister Sally Latkovich, CSJ, is an adjunct faculty member at CTU, as well as director of the Biblical Study and Travel Program and the Summer Institute. This podcast was recorded live on Sunday, June 7th, 2015, as part of our Sundays at CTU, an experience of liturgy and learning series.
Okay, if you could wind up your conversations. Before we get into my formal presentation, I was leisurely reading the Chicago Tribune this morning, and Mary Schmick, who is a noted columnist in the Tribune, was commenting on 10 things. Hopeful life is inspired by 10 lessons. And one of her lessons is, remain a spiritual seeker. Remain a spiritual seeker. Then a little later in the newspaper, some of you may know Iyanla Van Zandt, who has been on with Oprah Winfrey, and she was asked a question in an interview that says, do you have a practice that helps you start each day? Here's her response. I encourage people to have a daily spiritual practice. That's the best way to take care of yourself. If you have that daily practice, it means you're getting divine guidance, and you're not being guided by your own ego or personality. I thought that was interesting. So, here's where we're headed today. I just thought I would give you a general outline of my presentation, kind of like when you get on a plane and the flight attendant says, this plane is going to thus and such, and if you're not going there, this is a good time to depart. So we'll begin with the emergence of spirituality before we look at a variety of definitions of spirituality, including my own, the foundations of Christian spirituality in Judaism, and we'll conclude briefly with the prominent spiritualities that are embraced by our church. Historically speaking, spirituality was not really distinguished from religion until the rise of secularism in the 20th century, with growing popular disillusionment with religious institutions as a hindrance to personal experiences of the sacred. That's not to say that spirituality didn't exist. It is to say that it was distinguished and became a popular term in the 20th century. As you know, in the past 25 years, interest in spirituality has greatly increased. And, as you also know, there has been a drop in public confidence in religion and religious experience, in leadership. It seems to me that in history, when the institutional church was, for want of a better phrase, in trouble, in crisis, people turned to their own experience of God, and spirituality took a very prominent role in people's lives. Keep this comment in mind when, in a later moment, we'll survey the prominent spiritualities born of great men and women at times that the institution was in crisis. And here's a second observation. Although spirituality has come into its own recently, when we look back in history, we notice its importance. For example, way back in 664, there was a synod, a church synod, held at the Abbey of Whitby in England. By the way, the monastery at Whitby had an abbess as its head, whose name was Hilda. The council was called to make a determination for the church based on its spirituality, though it wasn't called that at the time. The decision was between Rome, which was rather legalistic, and that of the monks of Iona, where Celtic spirituality originated. The council decided for Rome, but as we know, Celtic spirituality has experienced a great resurgence. If you're interested in learning more, I recommend a little book to you entitled Listening for the Heartbeat of God by J. Philip Newell, Celtic Spirituality. So let's take a giant leap from the 7th century to our own time. You may have read recently about the Pew Forum and their recent publication of research released only in May 12th on America's changing religious landscape. The report states that Christians in the United States have declined sharply as unaffiliated persons continue to grow. Another research organization entitled Lifeway reported in 2009 in their survey of 1,200 people that 72% of millennials report being more spiritual than religious. Isn't that a comment we hear often? 65% rarely or never worship with others. 38% never pray by themselves. And 65% rarely or never attend worship services. So there's credence to people saying, I'm not religious, but I'm very spiritual. Wade Clark Roof, noted professor of religious studies, interviewed California baby boomers and noted their preference for the term spirituality. Though they were hazy on the term, he gathered that they meant a rejection, not of religion perhaps, but of organized or institutional religion, which seemed lifeless and external. Having been disappointed with churches, it excited them to think that spirituality indicated something more vital and personal. They actually embraced spirituality as part of their identity. Now, be clear, it's not my intent to propose that spirituality and religion are mutually exclusive. That's not my intent. Quite the contrary. I rather believe that religion, institutional religion, is rooted in the shared spirituality of its members. And maybe we can talk more about that in the question-answer period. So, the term spirituality has been used in a variety of ways and by a variety of people. So here are a number of popular magazines that devote space to spirituality, which also indicates how interested people are in spirituality. Newsmax, a popular news magazine that features Joel Osteen. Does faith help in hard times? Obviously, it's in hard times when faith becomes important. Quick story. When I was first teaching in a Catholic high school, I was just out of college, and I was teaching 11th graders, boys and girls, Catholic morality. And they were wonderful kids. But day after day, their faces were blank. They weren't disruptive or disrespectful, just blank. So I said to them, "What am I doing wrong?" And I had more energy then than I have now. And one really fine young man who spoke with authority because he was the captain of the wrestling team raised his hand and he stood up next to his desk and he said, "Well, you know, Miss Lakovich, we don't really need it." And he was right. Those young people had fuller lives than they could hope for. They had no need. So about 8 years after that event, the headline of the morning newspaper said, "Girl on bicycle struck and killed." And that young man was the driver. He wasn't charged. He was driving on his street, going home from work. It was dusk, and a little girl rode her bike in front of his car. But I knew he would be grieving what had happened. So I stopped at his office to see him. And he threw his arms around me, and he said, "Guess what?" "What, Mike?" "Now I need it." So there's a point in life where we move from knowing all about God to knowing God. It's a real conversion moment. And I think spirituality emerges in that moment. Here's a popular magazine, Self. So this is a magazine that appeals to millennials, you know, focused on self-improvement, development. And the whole magazine, special, inspirational issue, your spiritual life. I don't know if you can read the article names. "The Guide to Peace of Mind, a Meditation Chart." "Workouts to Soothe the Soul." "What Fasting Does for Your Mind and Body." "Why Is Buddhism So Hip?" "Spirituality for Beginners." And "The Ten Commandments, What They Mean Today." Now, the authors of all of those articles have no religious background. You know, it's a secularization of spirituality, at least as we define it. Then the ever-popular Newsweek, who devoted a whole issue to spirituality in America. What we believe, how we pray, where we find God. And just one more, Lear's, now out of print, Making the Spiritual Connection. So, like the articles in today's Chicago Tribune, this is an important issue for people. And yet, it's very difficult to describe or to define. One other note. In just the last couple of weeks, I noted an article that appeared in newspapers by commentator David Brooks. You know David Brooks? The exact same article was published under two headlines. In the New York Times, it was entitled, "Building Spiritual Capital." You know, a little financial connection there. In the Cleveland Plain Dealer, it was, "Build a Child's Spirituality as a Bulwark Against Life's Burdens." You know, reaching out to people who are concerned about their children. At any rate, he speaks about the importance of spiritual formation in human development from childhood through adolescence, which will have great benefit to the adult person. So I'll have more to say about that. Now let's turn to people, theologians, who speak and write about spirituality. The first is Sandra Schneiders. She's professor emerita at the Jesuit School of Theology at Berkeley, now at Santa Clara. And she says, Christian spirituality is the lived experience of Christian faith. Very concise. And Joan Chittister, well-spoken and well-written Benedictine, defines spirituality in this way. Spirituality is theology walking. It's what I do because of what I believe. And our own Barbara Bowe, deceased Sister of the Sacred Heart, beloved former professor here at CTU, says this. Christian spirituality describes a particular way of responding to the Spirit of God. I'm going to pick up on that myself. And lastly, Ronald Rollheiser, author of a very popular book entitled The Holy Longing, and most recently a second book called Sacred Fire, as well as numerous articles, says, spirituality is about what we do with our spirits, our souls. And he goes on to say that our soul is the source of energy within us. And then my own description of spirituality. And it picks up on several of the definitions I've just given. The particular way that the Spirit of God breathes in us. That's very general. The particularity is about our particular person, male, female, introvert, extrovert, all the Myers-Briggs types, Enneagram type, particular, as well as our cultural background. It's very particular to us. The particular way that the Spirit of God breathes in us. No matter what our belief, Christian, Jewish, Buddhist, Hindu, Muslim, there is a belief in the inspiration of God. And I also want to mention that there are other spirits roaming the world that may capture people's souls. The spirit of greed, the spirit of violence. Now, that's very separate from our hearing of the gospel, our being baptized as Christian, but that broadens our understanding of spirituality. The Latin word spirare means to breathe, from which we get the word spirit. And the Hebrew word ruach sounds like breath, used in the first verse of the book of Genesis as the ruah hovered over the water, which is the breath that creates life. So, spirituality is the particular way that the Spirit of God breathes in us. And as we are open to that Spirit of God breathing in us, a kind of framework for our lives is formed. The shape, if you will, of our spirituality. And so, we have a frame. Now, the metaphor limps because spirituality is a living, breathing, constantly growing, evolving part of us. But it works as far as description. So, for any one of us, our spirituality is rooted in who is God. So, Joan Chittister said, spirituality is theology walking. Who is God for us? What do we know of God? What is our experience of God? For those of us born and raised here in the United States, you might remember your high school study of North American literature, and you might remember the starting line of Jonathan Edwards' sermon when he said, "We are sinners in the hands of an angry God." Well, that pretty much shapes his spirituality. But how would you fill in those blanks? We are blank in relationship with God who is blank. And creation. As Nancy mentioned, Pope Francis will promulgate his encyclical on creation on the 18th. And from my perspective, it's a welcome document. And I'm shocked at the resistance to it. So how do we view creation? So that's the foundational piece. It's from there that our spirituality evolves. And I do mean evolve, because our images of God grow and change. And then so does our spirituality. Where does our image of God come from? How are we formed? When I was a pastoral associate in a Catholic parish in the Diocese of Cleveland, there were four of us on the pastoral team. And in preparation for First Communion, we divided up the parents whose children would be making their First Communion. And we met with them over a period of 8 weeks and encouraged them to prepare their children to receive their First Communion. So on the first night, the topic for the adults was, who is God? And they were challenged. No one had ever asked them that, aside from those of us who still knew the catechism answer. So the assignment to the parents was, go home tonight and ask your children to draw God. And they did that. And they came back the following week, and they put out their pictures on the coffee table where we were meeting. And every one of the pictures resembled the dad. They had heard about God as Father, and they had experience of their own father. And perhaps that's the initial formation. I have friends who are Sinsinawa Dominican sisters who worked on a reservation in South Dakota. And they did a similar thing there. And the children came back, and God looked like their mother, because the mothers were the authorities and the nurturers in that community. So, we might reflect on how have we been formed in our image of God. You might suspect that another side of the frame has to do with love, particularly for those who are baptized, who follow the gospel, and who know that the greatest commandment is about love. And then, how do we love? Whom do we love? It's a very deep question. And certainly we could go in any number of directions there. Catholic social teaching. Love for the poor, the neglected. But that too is our spirituality. Prayer. How do we pray? Individually, communally. What's our favorite form of prayer? How did we learn to pray? Several years ago, Bill Moyers was interviewing Rembert Weakland, the past Archbishop of Milwaukee. And the segment was on prayer. And they were sitting in a park-like setting on a park bench. And Bill Moyers was holding a microphone. And he said, "Archbishop, how does one learn to pray?" And he gave him the microphone. And Rembert Weakland smiled a gentle smile. I think Bill Moyers was expecting a recipe. Here's how you do it. And Rembert Weakland said, "To learn to pray, one sits with one who prays. To learn to pray, one sits with one who prays." So it's the model of prayers who impact us. Certainly, Jesus was born and raised in the Jewish tradition, and yet there was something different about his prayer that caused the disciples to say, "Teach us to pray." So prayer. But finally, the fourth side of the frame is our life choices and behaviors. So spirituality is in no way separate from our minds or bodies. We are one living person. And spirituality encompasses us all. So what are the life choices we make, and why do we make those life choices? I dare to say that in our culture, we are encouraged to make life choices based on profit, on money, on income. And yet, we can observe others who have made life choices that are quite different. In the parish where I worshiped when I lived in Florida, our youth ministry program had dwindled to nothing, as has happened in so many parishes. And a new youth minister came, a young woman, married, mother of children, and she turned the youth ministry program into a service program. And suddenly, the program took on new life. And surprisingly enough, the young people from the Protestant churches in our neighborhood began to come to our youth ministry because they wanted to serve. So, life choices, behaviors. So, as we've already said, modeling is very important. I'd like to say that we are formed by the company we keep. We have the life experience of our family of origin, We have our educational experiences, classmates, teachers, administrators. We have church experiences, our own human development. But the foundations of our Christian spirituality come from our Jewish roots, particularly the book, the scriptures, which is the primary source of revelation, by which God is revealed, by which we are taught the importance of love. We are taught how to pray, and in the model of Jesus, how to behave. And the second is ritual worship, liturgical foundations. So the course that I teach here, which Barbara Bow used to teach, is Biblical Foundations of Spirituality. And the presider for our Eucharist today, Father Gill, teaches liturgical foundations of our spirituality. Liturgists have a Latin phrase that they use, and it's this: lex orandi, lex credenda. No, lex orandi, lex credendi. Pardon me. That means the law of praying is the law of believing. So how we pray, how we enter into relationship with God, leads us to believe. So we conclude with primary spiritualities claimed in our church, and the living out of inherited charism. This is not an exhaustive list, but it's a list to give us examples of spiritualities. So, Benedictine. Do we have any Benedictines here? We have one studying here. Oh, good. Wonderful. So the Benedictine spirituality is traditionally thought of in their phrase, labora et ora, work and pray. And the emphasis on prayer has always been, in the Benedictine tradition, very liturgical. The hours of the office, their celebration of the Eucharist, and then the work that they do, often in educating in those areas. Franciscan, who live the gospel in simplicity and holy poverty. No matter what their particular ministry, their spirituality, the framework out of which they live, following Francis of Assisi and Claire, is living the gospel in simplicity and holy poverty. Dominican, the order of preachers who are given to preaching the word. So they are evangelists in whatever work in which they're engaged. Many people come here to CTU, and when they learn that I'm a member of the Bible department, they say, oh, you're a Dominican? No. But I'm glad that they see that charism in me. You know, this is an individual, Julian of Norwich, and these are in chronological order. Julian was an anchoress in a church in Norwich. And she became a spiritual director for the people during the time of the Black Plague and Great Crisis. But her teaching was, and what she's remembered for, is all shall be well, and all shall be well, and every manner of thing shall be well. That being her byline, you can kind of think of who is God for her. What is creation? How does she love and pray and her choices? Ignatius of Loyola and the Jesuits. We have a great tradition of the spiritual exercises given by Ignatius to union with God. And a great part of achieving union with God is an emphasis on education and social justice. I know several people here work with the Jesuits and embody that charism. The Carmelites. I found this statement about the Carmelites is that they embody an intense thirst for an immediate and direct experience of God, relying on the writings of John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila. So, you know, Teresa of Avila's great work is The Interior Castle, going inward to achieve union with God. And John of the Cross, you know, climbing the mountain to the pinnacle of union with God. And Francis de Sales, Salesian, a practical everyday spirituality for living in the modern world in gentleness, peace, and joy. Again, these are just very short bylines of the spiritualities here, but they reflect that framework, an image of God that leads to prayer, love, and life choices. So, in conclusion, I hope that you have better words to express your own understanding of spirituality. But one last piece to leave you with. How do we maintain a healthy spirituality? I would say in the same way as we maintain our physical health. First, we have to eat right spiritually. What nourishes your spirit? Obviously, the Eucharist for us. But the symphony, artwork, the beauty of nature, to be spiritually healthy and alive, we have to eat right. Good food for the soul. Secondly, we have to rest. Not only physical rest, but to rest in God. And that takes great intention. We all want to do it, but it's hard to find time to do it. You know, sleep researchers have found that when we don't sleep well, we lose our capacity to dream. And we need dreams for our balance. And I've come to see that when we don't rest in God, we lose a sense of God's dream for us. And so we have to rest. And you might guess the third, eat right, rest, exercise. That's right. What could that possibly mean? I really encourage you to foster conversations about God, about faith practice. It's interesting that there seems still to be a certain privacy about what I believe. And the best exercise is to articulate our faith, our belief, with friends, with family, with colleagues. For those who have taken my class, you know that I always conclude with one question, and that is, what's one thing that you'd like to remember to take home with you today? Because if you can name one thing, you'll be able to hold on to it. What's one thing? So I thank you for your kind attention. And now we have a few minutes for comments, questions, sharing of the one thing you're taking home with you.
Touch on it a little bit, but can you comment on sort of the resurgence or reclaiming of the contemplative tradition that seems to be occurring now with, you know, Thomas Keating and Richard Rohr and that kind of thing?
That's a great question. Thank you. Everybody heard the question? The resurgence of contemplative practice. I think it's because we have rediscovered, I won't make the direct connection with Vatican II, but when Vatican II proclaimed that we are all called to holiness, I think there was an awakening of our individual capacity for God. And that awakening attracts people to that contemplative practice of going inward to find God. And the interesting thing is that's true of both extroverts and introverts. It's like going within. So thank you. Good question. See, nobody wants to talk about God. Yes.
You mentioned that there's a resistance to Pope Francis's encyclical on creationism. What would be the basis for that? I haven't heard that.
Oh, from people who don't believe there's a crisis in climate, for people who are resistant to that, probably Mary Frohlich could speak more to that about the resistance. But it's people who are opposed to climate change. And what that will mean for them. No, it's not about religion. You know, like Rick Santorum telling the Pope not to talk about it. Yes, sister.
I would like to ask that you mentioned before about one of your students who said that who needs spirituality. And you mentioned that when the life of only what we want, we have, then it seems like we don't need to go to spirituality. But when some like that car accident happened, and he really realized the need for God, for spirituality. So how do we deal with the majority of the young people who grow up in, like for example, in America, who may have many kind of satisfaction, material thing? How to help them to be hungry for spirituality and to grow in a healthy spirituality when it seems like they have everything they need for?
That's a very difficult question. My own response is we continue to plant seeds that will come to fruition when they are needed. We can't implant hunger in another. That's the work of the Spirit. But our work is to continue to plant seeds so that when the need arises, they will rely on that. Yes.
One of the questions you said was, what am I taking home with me?
Yes.
What I really, really enjoy, because I've always looked for this answer, especially with my own kids, is a lot of times they tell me, well, I have my own spirituality. I don't have to go to church with you. And I love the way that you explain that, what type of spirit do you have? For example, there's other spirits out there. And I think that I have the response now when I go back home and they tell me that, what spirit are you actually looking for? So that I'm taking home with me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let me just say quickly, in Ronald Rollheiser's book, The Holy Longing, he speaks about four non-negotiable essentials of Christian spirituality. The first is private prayer and morality. The second is social justice. The third, mellowness of heart. And the fourth, a community of worship. You know, we have in first world North America, we have canonized individuality. And again, I think the importance of community is resurfacing, and the joy of being part of a community needs to be shown so that our young people are encouraged to return to community and worship. But The Holy Longing is Ronald Rollheiser's book that has those non-negotiable essentials.
Can you repeat again the
fourth? Sure. Number one, personal prayer and morality. Number two, social justice. Number three, mellowness of heart. And four, a community of worship. Okay? Yes. One more?
One more question.
A follow-up to the question that you just answered?
Yes.
So people say I'm spiritual but not religious.
Uh-huh.
So my question is, do you think it's a way for people to avoid having reverence for God because they can just be themselves, it's all about me, and it's not about God? Or is it really a searching and a longing for God?
You know, I suppose both are possible. It would really be the individual person. You know, the gospel says, by their fruits you shall know them. So if a person really is seriously seeking God, by their fruits you shall know them. And if not, by their fruits you shall know them. All right. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you.
This has been a presentation of Catholic Theological Union. For additional videos and podcasts, or to learn more, please visit www.ctu.edu or visit learn.ctu.edu.